Welcome to the True Faith Podcast. Southampton 0, Newcastle United 0, and we're here to talk about it for you for about half an hour, 40 minutes, so I bet you can't wait for that. It's myself, Alex Hurst, Norman Riley, and just a quick mention before we get into the flow of things, True Faith have partnered with FansBet, who are a new online bookmaker who promises to share 50% of their net profit from tagged accounts for causes that matter the most to fans. The business is about fans and run by match-going supporters, and we at True Faith are delighted to be partnering with them, having met the guys who are involved. If having a bet as part of your match day and something you enjoy doing on football, racing, or any sport, you can download the FansBet app to sign up. If you do, please select Newcastle United as your club, obviously, even if you don't support Newcastle and just listen to this podcast for some reason, and select True Faith. You're basically, if you lose a bet, 50% of it will come back to us to keep this podcast free of charge and some other charitable stuff we're working on. If you don't bet, don't start. It's not for you. We're not trying to push gambling onto people. But FansBet have already helped to make a difference in the fan community, contributing to fanzines, supporters' trust, supporter travel, and also making a significant contribution to the first safe standing installation in England at Shrewsbury Town. Head to blog.fansbet.com to read more about that and the other charitable and good causes they have done by punters like me and Norman, who like a bet on football, occasionally losing the odd bet and then 50% of those losses going back to good causes. So if you do like gambling, it makes sense, because if you lose, then 50% of it, 100% of the money's not going through to the bookmaker. It's going back to a good cause like True Faith, if you want, or any of the other good causes listed on the Newcastle United page. So thanks to FansBet for their support. And Norman, you were also given some top support yesterday, as I've heard the Match Day podcast for patrons, which has already gone down very well. At Southampton in the away ends, Norman, tell me about your day. Good day overall?
Absolutely brilliant day, mate. We'll talk about the match. I mean, you can take the match out of me saying absolutely brilliant. The match doesn't really form part of that. But if I look at the day as a whole in terms of the people I was with, getting starting early, I think we met at Waterloo Station at 9:30, so my first pint was decked at 9:45. That's always a nice way to start your day, obviously. Not that I'm encouraging alcohol abuse, especially during the week on a work day, it's terrible. But really good people. Got down to Southampton, went to this cracking boozer called the Rockstone, had some good bait, walked up to the ground, went into a pub with a load of Southampton fans who were absolutely spot on. Some good conversations about Mark Hughes and what they think of him. The match itself, we'll go into that. But in terms of the atmosphere, I thought the Newcastle fans were pretty solid. Southampton fans, not so much, but we know why that is. A decent journey back, talking to people on the train, bumping into a group of Geordie lads who were staying in London for the night and asking for recommendations. So I sent them down to Shoreditch, so they're probably still gunning, to be honest with you.
Interesting that what were the Southampton fans' view of Mark Hughes?
They all know that he got the job because he kept them up, and they were like, we know it's not long term. None of us will be surprised if he's gone by the end of the season. The football's absolutely dire, and even though there's this kind of, he got the job because he saved them from relegation, they weren't in the relegation zone when he took over. And there's an argument that they were a sinking ship, but they didn't really improve their form that much under him. I think they only won one or two games, didn't they? And both of those were away. Was it only one game they won under him? And they managed to scrape enough points together to stay up. And yeah, they're just fully aware that it's one of those where if he lasts to the end of the season, then he'd probably be gone pre-season.
Fair enough. Enough of him and enough of them. And on to the delightful world of Newcastle United. It is just such good fun at the minute, isn't it? No goals again, a point on the road, a clean sheet. There's various things you can take or various things you can get worried about from this one. First of all, how was the away end at the final whistle? Was it still supportive? Was it kind of appreciative of what the scene, or was there a little bit of frustration kicking in?
I don't recall any frustration. I think the vast majority just headed straight for the exits, which is understandable. That's preferable to standing there and booing, that's for sure. But the fans who stayed behind, the way that the players came over, Rafa came over, there was a lot of kind of, hands up in the air, applauding, supportive singing. And I think as we go into Rafa after the match, kind of, alluded to the fans understanding the situation that we're in. And I think yesterday was a good display of support. And also, there was quite a lot of passionate singing as well. So I didn't pick up on any negativity whatsoever. And even the frustration that we all undoubtedly felt, I don't think that, as tends to be the case at home matches, filtered down on the pitch. I think there was an apathy, if you know what I mean. It's kind of, this is what we are, so what's the point in whinging about it, you know what I mean?
Well, we're going to come on to that later in terms of people who have certainly made plans to just not accept it in terms of the planned protest by the Magpie Group. We'll talk more about that later on in the show. Yes, interesting that, and also not entirely unsurprising. We're going to get on to performances, tactics and all that, but Norman, for you, before going to the manager's point of view, was it a good point? I mean, again, Norman does the Matchday podcast for patrons. Patrons pay £5 a month for roughly 4 shows per week extra on the Premier League and Newcastle United. Obviously, we'll have quite a few different variety of shows. We can't just talk about Newcastle not scoring goals all the time, but if you like the podcast and want to get involved, give it a try. Norman's Matchday podcast was recorded before the game, at the game and after the game yesterday to give it an instant reaction from the away end. Norman, you were constantly saying on the Matchday podcast, you'll take a point, you'll take a point, you'll take a point. So we are happy with the point.
Right, so I kept saying I'd take a point because we were so poor that you just knew we weren't going to score. So it was a case of, and I think I said this probably repeatedly, so if anyone's listening to this for the 100th time, I'm sorry, but I was a little bit under the influence yesterday, as people might have picked up on. But the reason that I kept saying I'd take a point is because I was so fearful of losing, mate. If they had scored a goal, there is absolutely no way we would have got anything. It's as simple as that. I hate to say it, but a point was the best I could have hoped for. It was obvious from sort of within the first 5 to 10 minutes that like both sides were really, really scared of losing. And it really kind of debilitated both sides' performances. And then, you know, as the game wore on, you're thinking, regardless of Hughes being an atrocious manager, they've got weapons that they could, you know, that might be used there. They've got players who can just spark something out of nothing. You know, they've got players who can hook the ball from long distance in the top corner. They've got 4 really dangerous forwards who aren't being coached properly and being underutilised, and they're not used tactically in the way they should be. So my paranoia and my kind of, let's just get a point, I'll be happy with the point, was because I didn't think we were capable of getting anything else, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's fair enough. And the manager said after the game that he thought it was a good point. He pointed to the clean sheet. It's away from home. I rarely disagree with Rafa. I disagree with him here. Had we beaten Brighton or Cardiff, it would have been a good point. Had we got a 2-2 draw or created lots of chances, I think it would have been a good point. But we cannot score goals, and we're picking up points in the games we should be targeting 3. The Brighton defeat was an absolute hammer blow to this season. And I understand people are remaining positive, and I have a lot of respect for them, and I can see where they're coming from. And I'm not saying we're definitely going to get relegated, but we're going to come on to individual players in a minute. But, you know, it's just, I think Southampton and Brighton are 2 really, really, really poor sides. And I know Brighton are flying what they're up to now, 15 points or something with a win over Wolves yesterday. But I'm severely concerned about this side's ability to stay in the Premier League. Now, I know Cardiff are shit, and I know Huddersfield are shit, and I know Fulham are shit. All those teams, I imagine, will spend money, proper real money, not, you know, short-term loan deals or emergency loan deals on deadline day in January. And I think that our inability to it's not even our inability to score. I remember years ago Leicester couldn't score when they went down under Dave Besson,
Tony Adams?
I think. Mickey Adams might have taken charge at the end of that season. Leicester couldn't score, and you had like Adi Arkampai just missing chances for fun, like open goals and that. That's different to this. We don't look like even creating a chance, never mind scoring a goal. And the amount of times, it's a chicken and egg thing. We need confidence to win a game. We won't get confidence by winning a game. So what has to come first? And you need a little bit of bravery from the players. And I'm not questioning their overall effort, okay? But you need, there's too many easy passes. There's too many knock the ball off to Paul Dummett, who's in space. Because he's in space, by the way, because the opposition leave him in space because they don't have to worry about him from an attacking point of view. There's too many shots from distance when a pass is required. There's too many crosses to nobody. Just whip the ball in, Matt Ritchie. Just get a ball in the box. There's no one there. And the lads who are there are like 4 foot. But just get a ball in. There's no, very few runs in behind. And in the first half, I thought, yes, Norman, Southampton are really vulnerable at the back. I thought, you know, particularly with balls over the top, particularly when Perez and Muto kind of like swarmed around a defender and put them on any kind of pressure at all. And it required that maybe step 5-10 yards up the pitch to have a spell in the game where you thought, you know what, for the next few minutes, we're going to put them on the back foot. And it just, for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen in any game, really, apart from the start of the Brighton game. And as soon as we get the, you know, I've heard arguments, we'll talk about this maybe a little bit for next week, about do we go all out against Watford or do we try and nick one in the second half? But I don't think we can nick a goal. I think the longer the game goes on without us scoring, the longer, the less likely it is for us to score. And I think you saw that against Brighton and you saw that last week. You also saw it against Man United. And no doubt, and Arsenal's another perfect example of that. So for me, I'm a lot more worried than I want to be, and I like the positivity coming from many. But this team just reminds me of our relegation sides in the past. The only thing is, there's less quality in this team than those teams, and there's more application. But I go back to key games in the relegation seasons where we missed big chances. We're not even missing big chances anymore. What, in the last two games, would you argue Perez, which wasn't even a chance we created? I suppose Muto's header over the bar as well, but like in two games against Brighton, who can't win away from home, and Southampton, who can't win at home, we've not tested the keeper properly. We've not hit the bar. We've not had a penalty turned down. We just look like we are treading water and trying to stay afloat, but no one really believes it. I don't think the manager really believes we're good enough. I certainly don't believe we're good enough, and I don't believe the players think we're good enough. I mean, I sat in front of Lee Charnley a few weeks ago at the fans forum, who said that the players believe that the squad this season is better than last season. Well, why don't you ask them again, Lee? Or was that just something that was a convenient soundbite for the night to try and mask the total ineptitude of you and your boss in terms of running this football club? Rafa after the game said, I thought it was a good point, like I said, Norman, we'll normally keep the Lord of the Rings analogies for patrons, but not that they're remotely popular, but you know, at Helm's Deep, when Legolas is kicking off saying like, look at all these, man, we're going to get smashed, and then King Theoden's like, however, we're going to beat these, be fine. And Legolas is like, what are you on about? And he's like, well, I have to say something. You know, I were going to get smashed, but we may as well pretend, keep spirits up. I feel like that's Rafa at the minute. And he's just saying these things in press conferences because what else can he say? He can't go out there and say, yeah, we're really up against it, or I'm really worried. You know, he said before the Southampton game, he was convinced we were going to go and win the game at Southampton. Well, we didn't, and we didn't even look like winning, and Southampton are fucking shit. So that's me being very negative, Norman. Do you agree with any of that, or are you a little bit more positive than me?
I agree with everything you say. I might be a little bit more positive. What am I talking about? I'm scared. I'm very scared. On the Lord of the Rings, mate, I like the fact that you quoted exactly as the script.
I think they were told them the exact words.
Howie, what's going on?
We'll beat these, man.
Exactly. Legolas is a Geordi. But you're right. I mean, we're at the stage now where this will be our 11th match of the season against Watford. Like, it's almost like what's the point in a point? You know what I mean? Like, we need a win. We so desperately need a fucking win that we've got to go and we've got to go for it. We've got to go for the jugular. And if that means that we're smashed by Watford, because Watford are a good side. Like, there's no two ways about it. They've got some very good players and they've got a really good manager. You know, there's every chance to do like they did last season, 2-3-0. But at the same time, I'd rather, I'm at the stage where I'd rather we lost and actually went for it than scraped out a point, because the points, it's what difference is it going to make now? You know, we need a win so desperately. Like you say, we've just got to gun and we've got to take the risks. Yesterday, again, you know, this isn't me questioning Rafa. I mean, because what the hell do I know compared to this man? However, what I maybe given the the lack of confidence in Southampton's defence, given how nervy they looked. And I've said this a million times, they've got really good players, they've just got a bad manager. But yesterday, I almost thought to myself, you know, like a 4-3-3, playing 4-3-3 against them, like three forwards bombing onto them, that would have really shook them, I think. But then again, you start thinking, well, who would we actually put as a front three? You know, like, we got players who can do any damage. You just don't know what the answers are at the minute, do you? Like, it's like you say, it's looking really bleak, and it does have that feeling of other relegation seasons where we almost look like we've just completely run out of ideas. You know, like, what do we do, mate? What do we do against Watford? You know, like, I think we should go for it. I really do. And I think we should take the risk of losing. But at the same time, like, did the players pick up confidence from keeping a clean sheet yesterday and getting a point? Would a 2-0 defeat next week at Watford at home, even though they went for it, would that be worse for confidence than scraping out a 0-0 draw? It's just, we're just in a very, very difficult situation, and I desperately need a win, but at the same time, where the hell's it going to come from?
Yeah, and on that same vein, it's one that we talked, me and Si did a tactical show through the week for patrons, and we said that the two games last season, Stoke and West Ham, were when the shit hit the fan, and we were Rafa was basically like, right, we're going to go for it here. He played 4-3-3 with Atsu, Murphy and Perez up front at Stoke, won the game, created loads of chances. He played 4-4-2 with Gale and Hosolu up front against West Ham away. And again, we created loads of chances and won that game 3-2. I thought yesterday was that day. I thought we were going to see, I mean, Murphy didn't even make the bench. I thought we were going to see a far more attacking side, and Rafa can only deal with the tools that are available. And, you know, this is like almost blasphemous, but if we're going to continue, particularly at home, to just hoy balls in the box relentlessly, you may as well play Hosolu, because he is a good header of the ball. No, he's not good at much else, but it's like, that was the I couldn't have done the post Brighton podcast if we'd won 5-0, so it wasn't a case of not doing it because we got beat. But I really wanted to say, and then I think Adam and Ben did touch on it, that the tactics at home to Brighton just seemed completely at odds with the team that were on the pitch. And we've mentioned it loads of times, you've got Shelvey dropping deeper and deeper and deeper, picking the ball up from the back, from the centre backs, which is bad. That's pretty much a reaction to Lejeune's absence and trying to force things. Shelvey needs to be in the opponent's half of the pitch doing damage, not next to our own centre backs. And then Diome, whose simple job last season was to stop counter attacks and win the ball and play it to Shelvey, is being found out more and more as not a very good footballer in terms of his ability on the ball. So there's all sorts going wrong. A win can fix everything. That's important. If we go out and beat Watford next week, then, you know, everyone's happy. We're going to Bournemouth, we'll beat them, and then all of a sudden you're like 14th, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's not the end. There is definitely scope for this to turn around. We've got the best possible manager in the world, in my opinion, to be able to do that and get that out of those players. But there is going to be a point, and it'll be interesting when it comes, when we get to West Ham away next year. When West Ham away in the relegation zone, and Rafa was like, right, fuck this, we're going to have a right go. Obviously, West Ham being ridiculously open and bad was a big help, whereas Southampton, you know, for all Mark Hughes' comments about Newcastle playing defensive, which we were, he's not wrong, and playing for a point, I also agree with him. I thought Southampton were really negative for the first 70-75 minutes before they really started getting men ahead of the ball, and it was very much a case of, if he'd lost that game, he may have lost his job. But again, Southampton haven't scored now in five games. They haven't won at home since November 2017, and if we can't go and create a chance against that, that's what concerns me the most. And it doesn't mean, I definitely think we're going to get relegated, but Norman, here's the real thing for me. Say we finish 17th, how would you feel?
If Rafa guns, well, if there's no if about it, is it? He's gunning at the end of the season. How would I feel? I don't know, mate, because what would next season be? You know what I mean? We finished 17th.
That's the thing.
What's next season going to be? Rafa gone? No, it's like, it's almost like, well, it's almost, there's nothing. I've got no thoughts on either way. It's almost like, well, if Rafa's gone and we're going into the championship, then so be it. You know what I mean? Like, so be it. He keeps us up. Ashley gets another season in the Premier League, gets the money again, puts in a patsy as a manager, because obviously, you know, he's realised that he can't have somebody with the individual personality and determination of Rafa Benitez in charge. He needs a patsy, so we'll get one, and we'll struggle next season, and we'll limp on, and we might finish 17th again, or we might get relegated. That's the future under Mike Ashley, mate. So how would I feel? I feel right now, like almost bereft of emotion.
That's
you know
the thing
I mean?
For me. It's like, yeah, I mean, a lot of people tweeted me last night when I said on both platforms, me at TF Alex 892 and at TF Weekly Pod, that I said it wasn't a decent point, and people quite rightly commented saying, you know, what Rafa said, and we'll stay up and think we can stay up. It's like, that was last season. That was last season, thinking we can stay up. It's like, we finished 17th this season, or 16th or 15th, and how will you feel? What will your emotion be? Will it be relief? Will it be elation? Or we're turning into Sunderland, and look at them, for all the Sunderland fans' boasts and bizarre claims about, you know, about being third in League One, and how much fun they're having and how great it is. There's still, like, you know, large swathes of people who just don't go to the games and don't show an interest in playing against, no disrespect to them, in terms of, I think, I'm sure they're fantastic football clubs, but I don't want to watch League One football. I don't really want to watch Championship football, truth be told. I will, of course, but it's like, if we stay up, I would take no joy from that. Just staying up and scraping it, like you say, Rafa leaving and a new dickhead manager coming in the shape of Pardew, who's never going to question what little funds he's given and what, you know, ludicrous players are put in front of him in the case of Kevin Keegan. Because the thing about this lot is they learn nothing. I sat in a room in front of Lee Charlie and seen the fact they think they're doing a bang-up job of running this football club. They think they're doing a great job, fantastic job. They are the best possible people to run this football club. And as Lee said, Lee Charlie, Mike thinks he's done a brilliant job saving Newcastle United. So just pretend you're that stupid for a minute, and you're Mike Ashley, and you go, and then you're watching that yesterday, and you're thinking back to 2008, thinking, oh well, would be like the you know, Leeds if I hadn't come in. So everything he does after this point, according to Lee, you know, Lee Charlie didn't mention anything else, is just been fantastic. It's been good, it's been positive. So well done, Mike, thanks for this. We're fucking enjoying it. So ultimately the whole thing feels a bit pointless. So what can we do? What options have we got? Well, all we can try and do is try and force the owner out. It may seem nonsensical, it may seem like impossible, but from my perspective, Norman, and we're going to get onto the protests now before getting back onto the match yesterday, I'd rather try and fail than just do nothing, than just sit back and let him ruin this football club any more than he already has. So Norman, the Magpie Group have come out with key statements from yesterday, not yesterday, I think it was Friday, they released them, a series of planned protests, very organised, many weeks in advance. I think it's really positive move by the group, and all credit to the people who are spending their spare time to come up with things like this. So, really quickly, next week against Watford, a mass flyer handout pre-match, post-match protest at the Millburn reception. So after the match, head down to the Millburn reception, the atrium, the glass atrium, the players' entrance, so people like Lee Charney and Mike Ashley can get to hear and know what people are saying. Now, the fact that this has been announced, will Mike Ashley turn up to the game? Let's see. There's no protest against Bournemouth in respect of the remembrance services and the armed forces on the day. On the international weekend, the Magpie Group are heading down to the Shirebrook head office, Sports Direct head office. Join us as we head to Sports Direct HQ. You know, get in touch with the Magpie Group if you want to go. If you live locally, if you live in the south of England, get involved. And I think they're going to be putting buses on from up here. Big one on the 11th. On the 1st of December. Have an extra pint before joining us for the match for an 11th minute walk-in. This is a big one. This is one, if you're not that keen on boycotting, which I'm going to come on to, go into the match 11 minutes late. It's not a big thing. It's not a massive part of your day. Let's face it, Newcastle can't score, so you're not going to miss much. And it will send a message out visually to the world. You know, there's the argument that the Premier League is beamed into 1 billion homes on a Saturday around the world. You know, those people don't really, potentially, some of them, don't really know exactly what's going on or who Mike Ashley is or what Sports Director, but they will recognise empty seats at Newcastle United because it doesn't happen very often. Joint protest at Sports Director Liverpool against Everton, and then the big one, which I'll come come back to a total boycott against Wolves, and then the 22nd against Fulham, Northumberland Street protest, Strawberry Place protest, Millburn Reception protest, and another joint protest against Sports Direct in Liverpool on Boxing Day. So, Norman, the two big ones there. My simple questions to you before I get your thoughts. Are you going to be walking in to West Ham 11 minutes late, and will you be boycotting Wolves?
Aye.
And why is that?
Because it feels like I'm putting up a fight as a fan of this football club against a regime that is just utterly abhorrent. And he's just been allowed to get away with it for 10 years. And I know there was the big protest against Spurs a few seasons back that did seem to spur him into action pre-season. Getting McLaren was a mistake, but there was quite a bit of money spent. And if anything, I hate saying it, but I just don't see Ashley going anywhere for a while. But this action, even if it makes him spend money in the January transfer window, it's achieved something. And as you say, with the Premier League football being beamed all over the world, empty seats will go down. People will recognise it. People will go, why is that the case? They might Google it, whatever country, and they'll Google it and say, why Newcastle United, why is empty seats, why the boycotting? And the more people that know about it, the more pressure it puts on Mike Ashley, because he's only concerned with one thing. He's only concerned with Sports Direct and making money. And if they're affected anyway, which they will be by boycotts, and they will be by people actually reading how abhorrent his business practices are, then it's going to have an impact. Whether it gets rid of him or not, who knows? But what it might do is it might spur him into some sort of action. Because at the minute, he's just letting the club die. And the fans, the Magpie group, anyone involved, they're the people trying to resuscitate it. And if I can be part of that, then I'm getting...
Well said, and I totally agree with you. There's an article now on the True Faith site. I'll post a link to it on the description of this podcast, called Who Are You? And it's just gone online this morning by David Crozier, and presents a strong case for boycott. Now, anyone who doesn't want to boycott or go to the West Ham games, they're not the enemy. Okay, you are not the, like, if you want to go to the match, you're not my enemy. You're not my, Mike Ashley is our enemy. He's the only enemy, and the people that work for him and continue to do great damage to this football club. Willful damage as well. It's not accidental, it's willful. But I don't want to see fellow supporters abused or criticised or whatever. You can speak general terms about supporters, but I'm not going to ever, look someone in the eye and say anything negative to them because they want to go and support their football team. However, there's a great line in this piece by David, and it says, if you go to the match on the 9th of December 2018, you will be saying, I'm with Mike. I cast my vote for your manifesto, Mr. Ashley. 11 more years of this, please. You won't be back in black and white. You'll be red and blue. And he makes the point, nearly everyone has missed a game because of a holiday, a wedding, illness. The club is now ill. It needs our help. Newcastle United has a cancer at its heart, a dark tumour slowly killing it. How can you literally sit there and do nothing? That's David's words, and I think they're quite hard-hitting words, but I get where he's coming from. And I just feel if you support Newcastle United, if you want Newcastle United to be what it's supposed to be, you won't go to that game on the 11th, on the 9th, sorry. Don't go to the game on the 11th either. That'll do, because there is no game. But it's now or never, and we've got this manager who 99.9% of the fan base has come together for and continues to spend money for, in terms of the money we put into this football club. And to have this chance as a fan base and let it go because, for whatever reason, you've never missed a match, or you like supporting the team, or it's your daily routine, or whatever like that, I would plead, don't go to the match on that day and go in late against West Ham. And maybe it is pointless. Maybe the naysayers who have never organised anything in their lives are right. Maybe they're right and we're wrong. But I'd rather be wrong and try than just accept that we can't get rid of them. So that's my take on it. Really interested to hear everybody who's listening's views. All views welcome, of course. We're probably going to be podcasting quite a bit on this because it's so important in the run-up. But I think I sing at the match, fuck off you cockney bastard, get out of our club. And I'm going to do everything I possibly can to get him out of our club because he is that damaging to Newcastle United. I mean, you've already seen the backlash, the carefully constructed PR backlash against the Magpie group. So you had you know, the night of the Magpie Group meeting, the players being taken to this ridiculous pizza place. Not that that place is ridiculous, but the idea of it's ridiculous. and then, you know, Magpie Group have released that on Friday this morning through Lee Ryder, who seems close to the club. There is a story that Rafa Benitez, who, let's not forget, was already offered a contract in the summer, but has been offered a new flexible contract. And to quote Lee Ryder, but probably Lee Charnley, but, you know, we'll who knows where the source of this story is. This is what it says. This is about Mike Ashley returning. This is in the Chronicle this morning. His return to the scene at Newcastle is understood to be down to his own personal desire to improve the relationship between himself, Benitez, Charnley, and the squad in general.
Horseshit.
Yeah, I don't have the words for that paragraph. I think the Chronicle should be embarrassed about printing that. Mm-hmm. And that you can print it, but with a fuck off massive caveat. Because Newcastle United, remember, Lee Charnley, Fans Forum, you've all read the minutes, I was there. The club tried to break its transfer record 3 times this summer, allegedly, according to them. 3 times they tried to break the transfer record, and we ended up with Rondon on loan, Mudo, Shaw. The club tried to break its transfer record 3 times. So, how about, Mike, you stay away from the matches, you're not welcome, no one wants you there, as you know, because 49,000 people stood stand up if you hate Ashley against Leicester and you thought it was really funny. You know, don't come to the games. Sell the club. And if you can't sell the club or you won't sell the club, just give the manager what he wants and sign some really good footballers in January. Fuck off with your articles in the Chronicle and your, you know, ridiculous contract offers and your PR and your spin and all this bullshit. Just give Benitez what he wants. The idea that Mike Ashley returning to the scene is going to improve the relationship between himself, Rafa, like Charnley and the squad in general is laughable. And anyone lapping this up, I'm not going to have a go at people. But it also says, Ashley was disappointed that things turned toxic behind the scenes in the summer when the players were involved in a bonus. Well, that's brilliant journalism. I presume it should say we're involved in a bonus dispute. But it just says we're involved in a bonus, but feels that the tension has eased since the club's pizza summit in Ponteland. What the actual fuck? Like
Pizza summit.
Like, first of all, I was in the fans forum, and Charlie said that bonus disputes were normal at Premier League clubs. The only thing is, everything here gets leaked. Well, I actually take issue with him saying that because it was the players refusing to do Sky interviews that seemed to leak the story. That was a pretty big thing. But Lee Charnley, it is normal. He knows of other Premier League clubs this summer that bonus disputes, they are absolutely normal. See, I think that's a lie. I think it's bollocks. Now, maybe it's not a lie that there was another dispute with a Premier League club, but I don't think it's normal. And I think the fact that it's caused such problems whilst Ashley's been at the club, and for Ashley to say he's solved that by taking the lads for a pizza, I mean, what's he said to them? We're going to spend money in January. We're going to invest. But we've heard it all before. You've got a bloke just last season, saying Rafa Benitez will get every single penny that this football club generates, and yet he took, according to the Telegraph, £10 million out himself. So the bloke is a fucking liar, and I've got the Chronicle, or we've got the Chronicle here, printing this absolute horse shit. You know, Mark Douglas has been on the show many times. I like him. He's a good journalist. There are loads of good lads who write for the Chronicle and some of the output, but putting bullshit like this out is just damaging, in my opinion, and I'm disappointed, and it's poor, in my opinion, and it's, you know, it makes me think for this article, for the writer, whose side is he on? Because this is just absolute horseshit. I've gone off topic now. I've just started rambling about how much I fucking hate these people, but there we go, Norman. You'll be boycotting, I'll be boycotting, I hope you will be too. Right, let's talk about some football again, Norman. I've been talking for ages, so you need to do some talking. The big discussion is about Perez and Diome. Your thoughts on both performances for both?
Perez was more or less non-existent, but I mean, it's tough to lay all the blame on him for that. You know, there was just zero creativity. You know, it's not like Perez can just magic things out of thin air when he's not even getting the ball at all, which is pretty much what happened yesterday. And a lot of that's down to the fact that, you know, as you've already mentioned, Shelvey's having to like sit so deep that it's stifling his creativity. Then you've got Diarmi, who I don't think was particularly poor yesterday in doing what he can, what he can do, what he can only do, which is break up play, win tackles. That's it. That's his game. You know, there's nothing else to it. There's no kind of creativity there. He's not gonna skin a player. He's not gonna hit an outrageous shot. You know, he's a workhorse. He's what I suppose years ago would have been called a water carrier and nothing more. And that's just, you know, that's more a damning indictment of the regime you've just so eloquently dismantled. Not investing in players of quality that can create chances, that can do more than just, you know, run box to box tackling people. We actually looked better when Key came on, and I really want to see Key start against Watford alongside Shelby. Key not only offers the physical presence of Diarmier, he can also pass, and he can play short passes. He can play football alongside Shelby, and he can play really good long passes. I think he's just a better footballer than Mo Diarmier, and he's there, and he needs to be given a run on the side as far as I'm concerned. Perez, again, Watford at home. I'd rather see. I still think there's an argument that Perez is probably the best finisher at the club, but he's just got zero confidence at the moment. So I think he needs to be taken out the side, and I'd go for, as you mentioned, as we spoke about in the preview, I think possibly Kennedy in the number 10 role with Ron Dunn up front, or Mutu in the number 10 role with Ron Dunn up front. That's what I want to see against Watford. I think the change needs to be made. I'm not saying that this is all the fault of Diarmi and Perez, their poor performances or their non-existent performances. I just think they've got zero confidence, and we need something new. And I want to see Key in there, and I want to see a new front two. Simple as that.
Fair enough. What's happened to Perez? Why do you think where's the player from February to May last year gone?
But we know that there's a number of factors. He's not playing up front with a player in Dwight Gayle, who just opened up so much space for him. Almost to the point where Gayle was so busy occupying centre-halves and full-backs with his kind of, you know, flank-to-flank running and his movement, that Perez was, he was almost forgotten about, and that's where he did his damage. He's ghosting in behind players into the space, near post finishes, and that space just isn't there for him anymore. So obviously that's affecting his confidence, the fact he hasn't put the ball in there, the fact he's not really getting any chances. Yes, the Brighton chance last week, fair enough, but that came more from a mistake than anything we created in particular. It came from a Ryan making a save from a long-range Shelby shot, so it was a kind of instinctive as opposed to well-crafted chance. Also, you mentioned it before, we're going through the same kind of arguments. Lejeune not being in the back, meaning that Shelby's sitting too deep, meaning that there's nothing kind of happening in a 40-yard space between probably sort of 35 yards out from our 35-yard line to the edge of their box. It's like a no-man's land. It's like we have got nothing in there. There's nothing happening because Shelby's having to play so deep. And, yeah, Perez is just, he's not getting anything. And, you know what, you could say maybe he should start making things happen for himself, but when you're not even receiving the ball, it's pretty difficult to do that, isn't it?
I agree mostly with you. I think that sometimes he does get the ball and is very wasteful. He loves to check back, which is infuriating at times. You know, there was a time at Old Trafford, I think, we're possibly 2-0 up or 2-1 up just before they equalised, and he did check back and he rinsed whoever was, Luke Shaw maybe, and then rather than just hitting the ball across the face of the box, he tried to nutmeg Chris Smalling, and it was just like, it's too much, and he seems a little bit muddled about his role in the team, and unfortunately, I think he's got to be dropped. I like him as a player, and he's good in the box, but there was a time yesterday in the first half when we managed to break on them on the rare occasions in the game, and he took about three touches before playing the ball out to Kennedy, and by the time he'd done that, Southampton had retained a little bit of defensive shape, and it's just like, either fucking pass it first time, so Kennedy's got as much time and space to like continue that run, but it was a shit pass, and Kennedy came inside and hit a defender with a shot, and it was just like, I don't think he's there mentally at the minute in terms of his role on the pitch.
I agree.
Almost like last season, I think he was dropped for that West Ham game. Taking him the away game, taking him out might be good for him, give him a break. And you could argue the same with Matt Ritchie as well. Matt Ritchie's going through his usual October to January slump, which happens every year. I just feel like they could both do with a bit of a break. And we need more pace in that team. We're such a slow team. We're so pedestrian. You know, you look at that counter-attack goal against Southampton last year, which Perez played a huge part in, let's not forget. And that's the kind of clarity of thinking and ability that he's got when he does a little faint pass and delayed pass to Gale, who rolls it into to Kennedy. And Kennedy and Gale are rapid, and Muto's fast. He's not as fast as Gale, but yeah, I think for me, Rondon and Muto have to start the next game. But there's a big fear factor here. There's a big fear factor for me, Norman. It's basically Rondon or bust, isn't it? Like, people are kind of hoping, expecting Rondon to come back in and fix things. Because that's not an unreasonable thing to hope for, because what else is there? Beyond that, you're looking at playing like, a Shearer Ferguson-esque 4-4-2 with two just lads absolutely hammering centre-halves and hoping to get something off the back of that. So that's a really important one. Norman, another question for you. Do we defend well? People have been telling me that we're still defending well. Do you think we'll defend well? Because Southampton had more than 20 shots yesterday. It just happens that most of them are terrible and off target, but I kind of worried how easy it was to get it with through the middle of the pitch, and how often we're kind of content to let players run 10, 15 yards with the ball and get a shot off outside the box. Your thoughts, though, do you disagree? Do you think that we're defending well still?
I think the defence, they're defending well, but that's it. There's no protection offered really by the midfielder, and like, we're not really defending from the front. So if you look at the four individuals in defence, Yedlin, Lascelles, Fernandes, and Dummett, they're all individually defending well. As a unit, they defend well, but they're not getting help from anywhere else. So that's why you get sides, having 20 shots at goal, because they're not really being stopped. They're not really being stopped until they sort of get in and around the box. I suppose you can compare it to Brighton. I thought Brighton defended well against us last week, despite the fact we had 20 odd shots. So I'm talking about Dunk, Duffy, and the two fullbacks performed defensively really well, but in the middle of the park, they were absolutely, they were like a sieve, and that's kind of what we were like yesterday. So as a collective unit, the team isn't particularly defending well, no. As a defence on its own, those players are playing well, with Fernandes and Lascelles in particular developing a really good understanding. That doesn't mean we don't miss Lejeune, because Lejeune offers so much more as a footballer than either of those two. But they're defensively solid. Do you see the point I'm trying to make here?
No, absolutely. Or am I just rambling? Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think you're right as well. I think we'll look less of a cohesive defensive unit, but then we'll just look like less of a football team this season compared to last. Lascelles is...
Oh, sorry, I've got a question for you, mate. A question for you. After you've answered this, Wes, I remember, I want your opinion on the key Diomi situation. What if you agree with me or not? Well,
I'm kind of, we have to change things. We have to. It's just not happening. You go back to Cardiff away, and it didn't happen there. Absolutely not, from an attacking point of view, and nothing's changed since, in my opinion. Brighton was a little bit better, but Brighton are shit away from home. I definitely think that we'll have to try different things, unfortunately. So I would absolutely give Shelvey and Key a game against Watford next week. I also think Key played well against Chelsea in that game. The one we're lucky to lose at the end. But do I think that Key and Rondon are going to turn this team from a team that can't even fashion a chance from open play? No, I don't. It'd be interesting to see how we'll play against Watford, though, because Watford will have a lot of the ball. They're in good spirits and good confidence. I was expecting to see a rapid counter-attacking performance yesterday that I didn't get. Though we did do that at Manchester United in large parts. So, yeah, I'll play Key. I would try it. Personally, I would, away from home, I would just be packing the team with pace, in terms of I'd be playing Kennedy, Muto, or Rondon. Or you could even play, Kennedy, Murphy, Muto, Rondon. They're all good options for a front three, like a 4-5-1 or a 4-3-3. 4-5-1 out of possession, 4-3-3 when we've got the ball, and really try and push teams back. That's just me as a fan, frustrated that I've not seen Newcastle have a shot on anger for like 6 months. So, I think this is the worst ever start to any season, I think, in the club's history, possibly, or the worst start since the 1898-9 season. So for me, I'm just all for trying different things. Going to the match at the minute, shit, it's not enjoyable. I'm not looking forward to Watford. You know, I'm looking now, should I be going to Burnley and Everton? No, two games I would definitely normally do midweek. And it's not just because we're shit. Everyone listening to this is used to their football club being shit. It's not a new thing. It's just the lack of purpose that gets me down most of all, and the lack of desire from people within the football club to be the best it can be. So why should I spend my Wednesday night in Liverpool taking time off work? So I'll probably still go, but that's just how I feel at the minute. So yeah, I'd change things. I'm rambling now. To answer your question, I'd definitely change things as much as possible, to be honest with you. I don't think there's much you can do with the back four. Realistically, you could argue that as well as Fernandes is playing, we'll miss Lejeune so badly in terms of being able to play the ball that Shaw's worth a shout. It was good to see him back on the bench yesterday. Yeah. I kind of said through the week on the podcast that, well, he can't even get on the bench, how bad must he be? And Rafa chose Kieran Clarke ahead of him for the Arsenal game and possibly another couple of games, so how bad must he be? But the fact that he's back on the bench with Key. Did you say Key had a spare tyre on the Matchday podcast? Have I dreamt that? I'm pretty sure you did.
He looked at me like he's carrying a bit of timber, but it might be muscle. But he was on the pitch, and I thought, Christ, he's looking wide around the hips.
Too many Toby Carveries. We've all been there.
Exactly. Too many pizzas at Rialto. He's got a thing for them now. Big Mike's got him up there on the pizzas, and he can't stop it. He's up there slamming calzone. He's chasing pizzas with calzone. That's what I reckon it is.
With a carbonara dessert.
Exactly, mate. I drinking the cream shit out of the bowl.
Yeah, but this player who we're also talking about, one I was desperate to see start. Muto's a frustrating one, because after the positive performance at Man U, Norman, he's just looked all at sea the last two games. And then you've got Rafa after the game yesterday saying that he needs to learn how to play in the Premier League. What do you think Rafa means by that?
I think it's exactly what it is. He's a player with talent, but he's played his whole football career in Japan, and then a couple of years in Germany. He's not kind of Premier League ready, which is a real shame. You know, some players will come from certain leagues and they're of such good quality, you know, they'll settle in straight away. Muto is a good player, but he's not of that quality where he's just going to hit the ground running, unfortunately. Yes, he was good at Man U away, but there was a bit of a surprise factor. Nobody saw that performance come from any of the players like the first sort of 60 minutes. But I think what we're seeing now is a player who's just inexperienced. Not only is he inexperienced in the Premier League, he's also coming into a side that's got no confidence. He's coming into a side in which, you know, you're looking at the kind of front two, even arguably the front six if you include the midfielders, that, you know, our offensive players aren't really sure what the roles are on the team. Everyone looks uncertain and hesitant, and that's rubbing off on Muto, and it's probably the same on the training ground. You know, on the training ground, people are going to that lack of confidence is going to be obvious. So he's just a player who unfortunately is probably very much a victim of his circumstances to a certain extent at the moment. I.e., he's come into a new league, into a team that's poor.
I would like to see him make more runs behind the back four. I mean, his pace is supposed to be his strongest asset, and he just doesn't do it. He did it at Man United. You know, there was a couple of times against Brighton where Shelby kept looking up, and there was just no one making any run to try and push their back four back. And I think once or twice Kennedy did this at Palace as well, when Rondon was kind of walking around for the first half injured supposedly, where he just kind of plays the ball anyway to kind of try and make a point. I think I honestly believe he does that, where he's just like, you're supposed to run onto that ball, that's the idea, and then we'll win a throw in, or Perez can compete for the second ball. Muto just seems to be going for headers and losing them. So his Newcastle career really hasn't got going, but then the season hasn't got going full stop, so maybe I'm being a bit harsh. To finish off, because bizarrely, Norman, we've done 48 minutes so far, which is incredible for this alleged game of football that took place yesterday. Just really quickly, I forgot to mention earlier on the protest stuff that Rafa was asked after the game about the protests, and he quite obviously said that he needs the fans in the stadium for 90 minutes. I think it's a really disingenuous question to ask him, certainly now, because what else is he supposed to... If he was supposed to say, I back the fans 100%, they should protest against this football club, he'd be sacked for gross misconduct, probably not receive a penny. I just think it's a ridiculous question to ask him, then to report the answer like it's some sort of... almost like an anti-protest thing. Again, it makes me wonder which side these people are on.
Who the fuck put it? It's almost like Keith Bishop just asked the question. It's like he was the journalist.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And but, you know, on Rafa, you know, we'll love him here. I think he's a fantastic manager. I never want him to leave, but he is leaving. And the sooner some people accept that, the better. There's no longer if Rafa goes, I go. It's when Rafa goes, I go. He's not gonna. The issue that we have at the minute with Mike Ashley is much bigger than Rafa Benitez. As much as I love Rafa and I understand Rafa Benitez's sole aim is to keep this club up this season, and then that's him done. We'll have to think much more longer term. What about the next 5-10 years? What about another 11 years of this? Do you want your kids? Do you want your family? Do you want your friends? Do you want to go through another 11 years of this, and to do things that the manager says? It's very short term, in my opinion. But that, you know, again, that's just my opinion. I don't blame you if you want to stick with that, or you know, you think I'm wrong, and you think that we'll have to back the manager with whatever he says. That's understandable. Norman, are you coming home for Watford? I say home. You live in London, but are you coming to Newcastle for Watford?
I'm sat here debating it. Give me 24 hours to make the decision, mate. Right now, I just given how unfucking believably dull yesterday's match was. I'm just contemplating wrapping football in altogether and taking up Crown Green bowling. I just genuinely don't know, mate. I genuinely don't know at the minute. Like, it's the reality is, like, for me, it's at least a couple hundred quid. You know what I mean? The return, and I've just done Southampton. I was EM last week. I'm going to the next away match, I think. So it's just a decision. I'll console my wife and get back to you. How about that?
Fair enough. But your thoughts, you know, right now, you know, if I put you on the spot, do you think we'll get a win against Watford?
Oh, of course we are, 3-0. It's... you know what it is? The thing is, it's like, we have to win at some point. We're not going to go through the season not winning a game. So this win has to come. And Watford and Bournemouth at home are two matches that, you know, we could and should be looking to pick up 6 points in. But we're so poor at the minute, and they're two very good sides. They both spanked their respective opposition yesterday. They've got dynamic, quick players, and you're kind of looking at us now and you're thinking, how do we beat them? How are we even capable of beating these sides? You know what I mean? That's the problem. But it'll get to Thursday and Friday. We'll attack the wood again. You know, we'll start getting more. Well, the optimism levels will climb up because we're idiots. And 24 hours before the match, I'll be saying, of course we're going to win. But right now, I cannot see how we're capable of beating these sides. I cannot see it, mate. I don't know what you feel.
I'm the same as you. I'm thinking, let alone win, how are we going to score a goal? And then it's the usual thing, and we talked about this on the tactical show we did for Patrons, and also I think on what you touched on the match preview for Patrons through the week, was that it's a long... My biggest criticism of Raf would be it's a long-standing problem that when we go a goal behind, normally, I think it's only West Ham and Brighton in the Championship, when we go a goal behind, even when we had a good team in the Championship, we don't come back from it. So that's the worry for me, That's why it's so mental that Mark Hughes set up so defensively in the first half yesterday. If I'm Brighton or Watford, or if I'm either of those managers, I'm saying get into these early fucking doors, because you get a goal, they're not coming back from it. And I don't know how to counter that. And I know that the stadium will be nervous if it's 15 minutes and 0-0. Never mind 75 minutes and 0-0 or 0-1 or 0-2. You look at Leicester's struggles this season. Obviously, it's a horrible thing that's happened last night with Leicester City, and I'm sure the thoughts of everyone listening are with the families of the people affected. But Leicester's season and performances, they literally strolled to a 2-0 win at St James's Park, and I think Watford and Bournemouth are both better than Leicester. So I'm not confident, but you know, a couple of pints before the match, you know, I don't think we've done a match preview this season for Patrons that we've not predicted a winner. So obviously as the week goes on, something just happens. It's like a chemical reaction in the brain, which is just like, we'll beat these, man. We'll see. All I can say is we'll see. You know, it's one of those games where you take a point now because they're in such good form, but points are no good, but we need to win. I just crave that Saturday night feeling at 5 o'clock. Of despite like having plans of going home, and when you've won a game, all the lads are like, how I come for a couple. Like, I miss that so badly. I miss that, you know, miss scoring goals and watching football, but I miss that immediate post game elation of winning football matches in St James's Park, especially. So it's going to happen sometime. We'll beat someone. We're not far from the worst team, you know, in Premier League history. Like, you know, I saw a tweet, I think it was from by the Minute NUFC, saying the worst Derby team ever by this point at 5 points in 10 games, though the caveat to that is that the hard played Allardyce's Newcastle. We would beat Allardyce's Newcastle now, so that's not much comfort. But anyway, this has been the True Faith Podcast, 54 minutes. Well done if you've made it to the end. We'll be back for you next Sunday after Norman's 3-0 win against Watford. Cheers.
Way aye.